You're listening to The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
We're back. Welcome back to The Good Morning Show. Oliver O.T. Thomas, the early bird, and Ty WBOK. Listening audience, man, what a blessing to be able to get up every day. I tell folk every time, if you're not happy about getting up, just think about the alternative, right? So every time you get up, every second, every minute, every hour, every day, every week, man, our Creator gives you a chance to make it better no matter what the challenges were before. So, man, be happy about greeting God's day every day. We want to thank all of our contributors and all of our listeners. We want to thank our sponsors, United Healthcare, quality, affordable coverage, educating Louisiana on all of our healthcare options, doing it the United way. We want to thank the Great New Orleans Marketing Corporation, Mark Romig and the Corporation family, spreading New Orleans and its unique culture and its people throughout the world. We want to thank all of our guests, Brother Kashif, man, dedicating his life to reentry. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for reaching out to men and women who are incarcerated, formerly incarcerated, and helping them return in terms of getting their citizenship and how they participate. I want to thank Robin Martin and Terry Frierson, New Orleans Legacy Band Association. We have so much talent in this town. The band combine is a great opportunity. You can get a scholarship. You can go to school. You can get financial packages for music. Here's another opportunity. Thank Joy Prophet, Essence, introducing the pipeline and economic inclusion initiative. And I want to thank our two guest here today, James Galata Jr. and Fritz Message, Susan Talley's old man, right here in the studio. Guys, God bless y'all for this. I think this is a conversation, an initiative whose time has come. We've talked about it in the underbelly. It's been part of those secret conversations. We see what's happening with the NCAA right now. Long past overdue. We're going to start with our senior representative here. Fritz, why is this? First of all, where are we right now with this conversation? Why is it, Fritz? No, we're going to start with James. Why are we dominating this? Why is this an important initiative, and why should we be discussing this publicly as we work to a solution, James?
Well, I think it's important two reasons. One, which the public is interested in is sports and
the public
and
is
athletics,
interested.
You know, so that and that's not necessarily the best reason to be talking about this. The other important reason to be talking about it is the impact that it has on young athletes. Mm-hmm. It has to do with not just what we see on the field.
Absolutely.
And on the court, but what the incentives are and what the, in some cases, penalties are for progressing through young life.
James and Galata Jr. and Fritz, I think that's the importance of this conversation. I think we're focusing on the sport, forgetting, Fritz, that there are lives and families that are caught up in this. Please expound on that.
Right. So it's it's basically a situation, and this we'll get into the ruling a little bit
Absolutely.
Later. But it's basically a situation where, yes, you know, athletes under the current rules can earn a full scholarship to school, and that, you know, that's obviously valuable. Mm-hmm. They're getting an education; it's worth a lot. But you still have these athletes that are coming from these families, you know, that don't have the means, and you know that can't necessarily just survive on their kid just getting a college education. That are watching the schools, the NCAA, the broadcasters, pretty much everybody else involved.
Get paid.
And get paid from the billions of revenue that they're generating.
Well.
Exactly. And so that's really what this debate is about. And I think that's why athletes advocates are so, you know, fighting this so hard, because yes, they're being paid well in terms of earning a scholarship, but are they being paid fairly considering, you know, one, their life situations, and two, how much money everybody else is making.
Are they?
Well, Fritz and I think actually have a little difference of opinion about this, and the big divide.
And that's why we're talking about.
Yeah,
that.
and the big divide, and it shows up in this new legal decision, is whether or not student athletes.
And this decision by this California judge.
Yes,
recent decision
by a California judge in Oakland, California, holding that the current restrictions on grant and aid scholarships that were in place by the NCAA are invalid. Mm-hmm. And that's the headline. The subtext of the decision, and Fritz is really up on the details more than I am, the subtext of the decision, though, is that whatever a scholarship or aid that should be given to student athletes, it still has to be education related. And that's where the I think the ultimate division of opinion rests, because it's still not permitted, even under this decision, to pay student athletes for athletic performance. They can get scholarships, they can get extra payments on top of scholarships, and Fritz can talk about some of the limits there, but they can't. They're still not allowed to be paid, with some very minor exceptions, for their athletic performance.
But Fritz, they're in school for, because of their athletic performance. And I want to go to one of the things where the NCAA was criticized by the judge. In one of his ruling, he says that in some respects, stating that the scholarship grant and aid limit, which has changed over its history, does not follow any coherent definition of amateurism.
And I think that is one of the big wins.
Coherent.
And that's one of the big wins for the players in this lawsuit, is that the judge really did criticize amateurism as an idea. And really, and you know, in my personal opinion, probably correctly, but for what it's worth, the judge said, you know, the idea of amateurism, it's outdated and it's a little circular. It really is, amateurism kind of exists to justify, you know, setting a limit on what you're going to pay these athletes. But what the judge did say, how she hedged, is she said, yeah, you know, amateurism, it's kind of this, you know, mm-hmm. it's not a very coherent idea. But what she did say is, well, but people care that they're not earning very large salaries like professional athletes. Mm-hmm. And that's where she drew the line. She said, well, you can't limit the educational pay that these athletes are making, because that doesn't make sense, because amateurism doesn't make sense. But people still care that they're not professional athletes. They want them to be students. And that's really, I think, where the new battleground is going to be, is that where the judge kind of came down is that, you know, to be a real student athlete, you can't be earning a salary. And I think what player advocates are going to pivot to arguing now is, you know, you can still be a student and earn a lot of money. We know anybody who's familiar with colleges and universities know that
Absolutely.
There are wealth disparities. And so that I think that's going to be the new battleground as a result of this ruling. Can you earn a lot of money? Can you earn a lot of cash and still be a student athlete?
And Oliver, let me just stop you there. The decision has changed the vocabulary. Amateurism
Absolutely.
Is out, I think. I don't think we're going to be hearing much more about amateurism.
Absolutely.
But now something that she referred to as education-related is in. So that's the where the divide is going to be, is what is an education-related compensation.
And part of the ruling says the ruling as written allows schools and conferences can offer an unlimited amount of education-related benefits to a Division I player. Now, let's talk about the disparity, okay, depending on where you play and what's the university. I know one of the conversations we had with the next athlete was that if you're playing football at Michigan, right, I mean, the Michigan football program pretty much, and they got a good basketball team too, but the football program pretty much underwrites a whole lot of activity for the school. They bring in billions over a certain period, over decades, periods of time. So without those billions, the school can't offer a lot of Title IX scholarships.
That's right.
They cannot offer a lot of lot of other opportunities. So I have always thought, James and Fritz, that especially for men's programs, which dominate economically, without those programs, without those athletes, the school is limited in terms of funding other things that provide opportunity. How does that sit in the argument?
I would agree, and Title IX is kind of an interesting wrinkle of this, in that probably a lot of people don't really know this, but the way Title IX works, as you just alluded to, most programs fund the men's programs more than the women's programs.
Absolutely.
Right.
But
because of that, and because of the revenue generated by some of these bigger programs, you're right, it helps underwrite some of the women's programs. So it'll be interesting to see. Now, Title IX is an opportunity mm-hmm. law more than a money law, mm-hmm. but We don't really know how this ruling in particular is going to change that calculus, but you would think, and player advocates at least would argue that, you know, it would only increase opportunities, and it would only increase opportunities for more funding and more opportunity for women's programs.
James, we talked about tradition and thinking, not just between you and Fritz, but also in a lot of us. As an ex-athlete, my thinking is a little different. I mean, to me, that education is more valuable than whatever compensation. Because when I look at professional athletes, we know what? 65% of professional athletes, men and women, wind up broke. We know the majority of college athletes, so 1 in 20, wind up playing professional sports at all. So are we focusing, in many cases, even though when we talk about the fairness of this and what is amateurism and what is not, in many cases, these times, are we focusing on the wrong thing?
You know, I don't know. I'm still a parent, I guess, of a 30-year-old, but it's ultimately, it's the most important question. And really, in some ways, Oliver, I'd like to ask you a question back. One of the things that is new, it's old in baseball, new in basketball, and still hardly exists in football, and that is developmental leagues for young players.
Mm-hmm.
And
hockey.
And you know, one of the things that to me, and not being really an expert on this whole subject, but just a lawyer, I'm curious about how if we get to the point where we have real alternatives for young mm-hmm. athletes, and they really do have a choice of whether or not to go to college or pursue athletics starting at a young age, which is available to them now in baseball for mm-hmm. the good players, and will be soon in basketball. Mm-hmm. But doesn't exist in football. In fact, there's still a 3-year limit.
Absolutely, you got to stay 3 years,
and which I think creates a lot of unnecessary mm-hmm. Stress in families, and
especially
and
on football players. That's a great observation, James.
But I as a citizen, a human being, and a sports enthusiast, as a spectator. Mm-hmm. I can't answer the question of what's best for an individual young person.
Well, let me give my opinion. As an ex-college athlete, as someone who dreamed of going to the pros, who played in those summer pro leagues, who probably played more than he should have, longer than he should have, chasing a dream, I actually think there's a disservice in many cases for the kids who can't go to a development league to be forced into a college situation, that they're not emotionally, intellectually, or academically prepared for. I've found that many of those athletes who only believe and who've only focused on getting to the pros, once they see that they're not only are they not prepared for the pros, but they're not prepared for college, it does an emotional disservice to them. I think if we're going to be fair in sports and college sports and professional sports, they're going to have to develop alternative leagues for all of the big major sports, because we're damaging too many children, and we're not only damaging those children, we're damaging those families and those institutions they come from and those communities that they come from. So in my opinion, Fritz, I think the best thing to do is let a student athlete be a student athlete. And those who desire for professional athletics, who've been deemed as having the opportunity, the talent to get there, I think another system or farm league has to be created.
I think you both hit the nail on the head in terms of the real solution to this problem is – legitimate choice.
Legitimate choice. That's absolutely.
Yeah, if you're an
legitimate choice.
Right.
And explain that for us, please.
And that if you're an 18-year-old football player or basketball player and you don't want to go to school, but you're good enough to be professional and mm-hmm. be compensated for it, you should have the option to go do that. If you value the education, or you just want to be a part of the NCAA and you like the college football or the college basketball, because mm-hmm. it's a lot of fun. And
there's some people who I love the college life.
Absolutely.
And that's not for everybody.
It's not for everybody, but if you choose to do it, you know, you should be able to, you know, you should be able to earn a scholarship. And so I totally agree with you on that front. And I think kind of where this ruling falls mm-hmm. in, and kind of where the debate, because I think we can all agree that choice mm-hmm. is a good thing. And hopefully we'll see, but I think the NBA is probably on its way to abolishing one and done, which mm-hmm. I think will be a positive development. But I think where the next debate is, you say, okay, you know, this – this athlete chose college. He chose to be a student athlete. The NCAA is still earning billions of dollars. Is it legal and is it fair to cap what that student makes?
And before we answer that question,
right.
I think the question that let's put coaches, let's say put coaches aside. Let's talk about college presidents and educators.
Yeah.
How will they feel,
we're going to talk about Will Wade.
How will they feel about not just the players earning money, but actually compensating the players that put on their uniforms and represent their universities with high salaries in some cases for the better players? What does that do to the primary mission of the university or the college, which is to offer education not just to the students but to everyone? And do colleges, do they really want to, and do their fans want to see players who put on their alma mater and uniforms who are not really students at all?
Well, and I want y'all to think about this conversation, the conversation that I had in college, and we had a pretty good small college team. The gym used to be packed. The conversation we had in Quad and the university setting once with some students who took exception to the privileges of college athletes. And so I asked, I've always been a thinker. So I asked the student we were debating, I asked her, I said, okay, I understand we have advantages. I don't have to wait in line. Y'all do. We had a house off campus. Y'all didn't. We got to eat the meals and, we got the opportunities from the restaurants and everybody around the town. I asked her, I said, how many people come to your classroom to see you make your A's? I said, how much do they pay to get in to see you read that history book? She said, well, nobody. I said, well, the gym's packed every week, every game.
And that's exactly right. And I understand that resentment, and I kind of understand the perspective of, well, these students, they get everything paid for, and they've got it made. But you're absolutely right. We've got this NCAA tournament starting on Thursday that – millions and millions of people are going to watch, and they're going to stop work to do it.
You're going to bet on the pools.
Right. I wasn't a varsity athlete in college, and nobody was stopping everything they were doing.
But you understood the game.
But I understood. I think I understand the game a little more.
So talk to me, Fritz and James, about are the universities doing a good enough job of educating how the system works? Because I've always thought it shouldn't be up to me to answer that question or the student athletes to answer that question. Then the university needs to be able to show the breakdown of the economics of the athletic department and how it benefits the other programs in the school.
It's a very difficult question. I'm sure it varies from college to college, but I think that the real dilemma that they find themselves in is that for those student athletes who don't have a professional career in their futures, in some ways they're maybe not doing the best thing for them because the demands that are put on athletes, even if you're good enough to play for Michigan but not to play pro, you're not going to have a lot of time for your studies and your education.
Right.
And for those young people, in some ways they're not being well served. Now for the others who have their mindset and have the talent to go pro, you have the other problem. They're not interested necessarily in the school and the student part, and in some ways they're being enabled to avoid some of that in some programs, and they're not taking full advantage of the time that they're in college to be college students. So in some ways, maybe at both ends of the spectrum, I'd say colleges probably aren't doing so well, but I'm sure we're not college administrators, so one day maybe you ought to have some of them on to ask them how they deal with that difficulty.
Before we talk about the next step for this legal challenge and where you guys think we're going, I like giving real life situations. I would never forget on my first year in college on our team, I was in the class with two other of my teammates, and because my mother made an effort that learning started around our dinner table before we went to college, the coach put undue pressure on me. I used to have to write three papers every time papers were due so that Pumpkin and James, and I'll just leave those names there, so that they made sure they maintained their eligibility. So in many cases, there was a sacrifice on my part to help my teammates just so that these other kids who weren't interested in that class could pass.
Well, now, under this ruling now, James and Pumpkin get their own tutors, so you don't have to do it.
Right, but that was back in the time when we didn't all have our individual tutors. So where are we headed here right now, and what level, especially with the Will Wade controversy, other high-level coaches and administrators, and something I want you all to add, what we talked about off, how the middlemen and the hustlers who have gotten involved, especially at the AAU level, And at the pre-college level, the damage they've done to the game, and in terms of elevating this question.
So briefly to touch on Will Wade, this ruling itself would not have saved Will Wade, and that it's kind of the way the ruling is written, as Jay has said, mm-hmm. you can pay for education related right. expenses, tutors, science equipment, etc. You still can't pay. You can't legally pay cash. You can't go to a player like Zion Williamson, but any right. player, and say, here's $100,000 because you're really good at your sport.
Right.
And I think until that battle is really waged, or until it's settled definitively, I think you're going to have this situation like the Will Wade, and with these middlemen where right. you're having these kind of illicit, under the table, kind of this underground market of right. schools and AAU teams bidding for players. And the real victim in that, I think, are the players who lose their eligibility or are vilified because they just kind of get thrust into this system where, they can't legally make this money, but they're already in a situation where they're just the subject of this bidding war. And
James?
Yeah, and I, to be honest, Oliver, this is something I'm not terribly familiar with. Mm-hmm. And Fritz has educated me on this situation. And it appears to me that, the people who have the incentive, most of the agents and apparently some of the apparel companies,
right.
what they're really doing is investing in young people with a hope for long-term payoff.
Absolutely.
when they do make big money in the open with the professional contracts. But along the way, there's this unseemly under subterranean system that has developed
Well, James, let me share this with you. And we've, as like I said, as an ex-athlete, someone who had dreams, but who stayed on top of the sport, has a lot of friends who played pro ball, and many are still involved in college. My take was a little differently. I actually thought that these middlemen, these agents, these shoe companies, these hustlers, and it may not be right, but I thought they took food off the table from the families that needed it. Because in many cases, and the colleges have always paid top athletes. So let's just, you got to be honest if we're going to start there. But once the hustlers got involved, whether they were agents or lawyers or AAU representatives or folk from the community, a lot of that money and that compensation that used to go directly to needy families, a lot of that stopped. So
interesting.
I think that right now we have an opportunity to make the kid important. James, I think you started it off the right way. What we found out was that we're forgetting about the life of whether that kid can run, jump, shoot, throw, bat, or pitch. What has happened in college athletes, if we've made them insignificant, we've made it more about the sport, and we've made it more about money than we have the life of that child, Fritz.
No, I agree. And it's I do want to reiterate, though, that there's no easy solution to that middleman problem. And
But you represent one of the best law firms and some of the top legal minds in this country. If you're going to bet on where we're headed,
well, we'll see. I mean, I think the players will obviously try. Player representatives will always obviously try again to try to get it to a situation where conferences and schools can pay basically cash for these players. I think it'll be an uphill battle, at least in the short term. But I do think.
And what do you think should happen?
My personal view on that is that I think the educational requirements should be rigorously enforced.
Mm-hmm.
You should maintain a certain GPA. You should have to go to class. But if you are worth $100,000 or whatever it is, you should be able to make that. I don't think under the law that there's a justification to kind of cap that amount.
James.
Okay, I'm a little different with Ritz. What I hope for, and I know will develop in basketball. Football is a different animal.
Body, maybe.
But is that there will be more choice for young athletes and for those who want to go to college or really aren't good enough quite as young people to go professionally, even in a developmental mm-hmm. league. If there's legitimate choice, then and if the colleges make sure which is part really kind of true in baseball now,
right.
that if an athlete wants a college experience versus a minor league pro experience, he's got that choice. And I think that if there is legitimate choice across the spectrum of sports, then whether we get to paying college athletes or not, I think that's going to diminish a lot of the pressure felt by the families as well as the colleges themselves, because then in some ways there would not be a lot of incentive for a college to pay an enormous amount of money for somebody who has a choice to go pro at a young age. And so I think that would diminish a lot of the pressures. It wouldn't solve everything, but I think a legitimate choice would help.
And at the end of the day, I think that the need is to get to a place of legitimate choice.
Absolutely.
A choice of the college or who they want, how bad they want them. Choice of the kid in terms of the institution and how he will fare there academically, socially, and financially. So if we get to a place of legitimate choice, I think we can all be comfortable there. James Galata Jr., Susan Talley's old man, Fritz Messinger, young man, thank you for your interest in this.
Thank you for
having us. It's good to have perspective. We'd love to have you guys come back and talk about is this opinion, because it's not going anywhere.
No.
And at the end of the day, to have some of the top legal minds in one of our leading law firms involved in this also gives us comfort in that we'll be fighting for the right decision, guys. This has been OT and Early Bird. And remember, every morning when I say, if you got some challenges, right, there may be some issues that you have difficulty dealing with. It may be somebody else's fault. But if you're looking in the mirror, if all you see is you, you might not want to wait on them to come fix it. You may want to do something about it yourself. Everybody have a wonderful day.